Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, Larry Mueller here, broadcasting live today from the Bayfield Pavilion in Bayfield, Wisconsin, to kick off Bayfield in Bloom, and we have a huge crowd. I'm telling you, it's a great group of people. We've got the pavilion is full. There are lots of great vendors and others that are sort of set up around. I mean, we got Kelly and Crew Flowers, Leaning Pine Native Plants, Department of Natural Resources, Wisconsin Aquatic Species Partnership folks, Friends of the North Pikes Creek Wetland, Levy Tree Care, Roxanne Gifts, Apostle Island Booksellers. There's an Ask the Master Gardeners booth, and there's a Northern Native Plant Group, and they've got a plant sale coming up on June 3rd. So all those folks are with us, and I'm really glad to have them all here and have you listening in today, because we've got three great guests for you today. Jason Fishbach, UW Extension Agricultural Agent for Ashland and Bayfield Counties. Jason, welcome to the show.
Hi, Larry. Welcome back. Gorgeous day for you.
Yeah, it's actually perfect. Don Kissinger, Urban and Community Forestry Coordinator with the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. Don, great to see you.
You as well, Larry. Thanks a bunch.
And Art Odie. Art's been with us many a time, a horticulture consultant, semi-retired from Botanical Garden and Arboretum Management. Art Odie, thank you for joining us.
Good morning, Larry.
It's great to have you here. And if you have some questions as you're listening in, I know folks in the crowd are going to be raising their hands and asking their gardening questions. As you listen in, you can join in, too. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org or post on the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page. And as the show goes on today, I know Jill Nadeau, our producer, is taking some photos. She's going to be posting those up on our Larry Mueller Show Facebook page. So if you want to see what it looks like around here, go to that page. And please do call in with your questions and comments. Art Odie, one of the joys of coming up here is to drive into town and see daffodils everywhere. How many daffodils are planted in Bayfield?
Well, I think originally we planted about 30,000. I think there's a few less at the moment, but they are a good sight. I have a poem to read about daffodils.
Oh, all right, let's hear it.
It's not my poem. I wouldn't ask anybody to suffer through that. This is Daffodils by William Wordsworth, 1815. I wandered lonely as a cloud that floated on high o'er vales and hills, when all at once I saw a crowd, a host of golden daffodils, beside the lake beneath the trees, fluttering and dancing in the breeze.
Well, you may not have written it, but you read it well. Thank you, Art. Well, we've got lots to talk about today, and we've got somebody from the Forest Service who's dressed up. I think we're going to post that up on our Facebook page. I'm standing next to our Forest Service person who is dressed like the Emerald Ash Borer. I thought at first she was a spiny water flea, but spiny water fleas are grayer than she's green. And so I'm sure we're going to be talking about Emerald Ash Borer, among other things, today. What are Jason Fishbach, just turn to you first, just as, again here. What are some of the issues that are going on in the state right now, in your part of the state?
Well, it's like usual these days. It's just a wild spring where it started out warm again, and then we cooled off in April, and now just finally things are starting to come on strong as the weather has warmed up. So we really don't know what to expect because things are always so different these days coming out of the winter.
Yeah. Of course, this kicks off Bayfield in Bloom, Art Odie, and there's lots of events and so forth going on connected with it.
I haven't been too much up on it. I think our Chamber of Commerce people are probably better informed than I am as to what's going on. But this is a great crowd. I think this is the biggest crowd we've had.
Yeah, it's a wonderful crowd. And if you go to online to Bayfield in Bloom, I think we have a link on our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. Jill will make sure that there's a link up here. It's not just today. It goes on for about a month, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. Yeah.
Yeah. So many tours and lots of activities.
And the best thing about it this spring is that this is going to be one of those springs when everything is in bloom at the same time. So come up and see it while it's really at its peak. The magnolias are blooming, the daffodils are blooming, the rhododendrons are blooming. Almost anything you can think of, tulips are in there. It's really great. It's going to be marvelous. And then towards the end of when everything else blooms, of course, we'll have the lupins. And that's worth another trip. So come to Bayfield.
Absolutely. Don Kissinger, Emerald Ash Borer is kind of a scourge on parts of the state and probably going to be a scourge through a good share of the state before it's done, isn't it? Is it not?
Yes, it is. And that, I guess, brings me to the point I'd like to mention about at Mosquito Hill Nature Center on June 3rd, they're going to be having a workshop. Golden Sands RC&D received a grant through the DNR. We give about $500,000 a year to organizations, cities, villages. And this is a great workshop because it's for the property owner who has a residence or the woodland owner as well. So they're going to talk about ID, assessment, chemical treatment, because you're going to use certain chemicals for certain size trees. They're also going to talk about wood utilization and then also selection of trees. If you're going to remove these trees, what trees can you replant? And they're going to do a planting demonstration there as well. So if interested, it's June 3rd from 9 in the morning to 3:30. Register at www.goldensandsrcnd.org, or you may call them at 715-343-6215. But we can talk about other emerald ash borer issues. It's definitely moving, and it'll come up on 9 years this year that it's been here in Wisconsin.
Oh, man. Well, thinking about trees, I'm holding now, of course, as you're listening, you can't see it, but I'm holding a tree root, and this is a tree root that Jason Fishbach or Don Kissinger, let's go to you. What happened to this tree root? It looks like a ball, doesn't it?
I'm guessing that when it was planted, it might have been put in an area where it was a heavier soil, clay soil, and it might have just kept being root-bound, or potentially when it was in its container, it might have been root-bound to begin with, and the roots were not teased out so that they could grow laterally. And that's a situation where if that tree keeps growing and growing, it's just going to basically choke itself off, and when it gets large enough, it's going to tip over.
Yeah.
I have a suggestion for people. If you buy a containerized tree or shrub, but mainly trees, from a nursery or garden center, if they're in a pot or other container, take it upon yourself to tease that plant out and look at the roots, because I would say that maybe the majority of trees that you get that are containerized are going to have at least incipient girdling roots. And I wouldn't hesitate to do it myself. I'd encourage you to do it. Just pull that tree out and take a look at the roots so you know what you're buying.
And the problem, Jason Fishbach, I think, is too that when you plant a tree like that, and if it's not correctly planted, it's going to be years down the road before it really gets sick and dies, and then you wonder why the heck it happened. And it probably death started in a way at planting time.
That's right. So the containerized stock are nice because it's convenient, but that's about it. So you're better off starting with a smaller tree, bare root if you can, so that you establish a healthier, better root system, and that you might find that the tree over time is going to grow, get to a certain size as fast or faster than the larger containerized plant that you purchased, simply because of what you mentioned, Larry, is that root system just gets stuck. It can't grow as vigorous as a bare root, that the roots are more evenly spaced, and you end up with a plant that's stunted.
Well, let's take some calls from listeners, and certainly we'll take some questions from the audience. So the audience, if you have a question, raise your hand, and Jill Nadeau will get to you. But first, to the phones, and let me see here. Jane in Viroqua, you are up. Thank you for calling.
What a beautiful weekend for all gardeners. Joy to you. I am starting a large cutting garden, and I have ordered a bunch of little seedling perennials to plant out. And I'm wondering, can I put those in raised beds, or does a raised bed make a perennial more vulnerable to the frost in winter?
All right, let's turn to one of our guests. Art, do you want to take it first?
Well, I think it's a good-sized bed. I don't think there's any problem with that. Just as long as they're all properly spaced, properly watered in, you've got the roots spread out nicely. I don't see any real downside to a raised bed in that regard. But if you're planting in a raised bed, I would encourage you to do what if you can take the time, have the patience, do what the old gardeners used to call double digging. You go down two spade depths, and then you turn over the second depth of spade and add manure to it, and then put your topsoil back in over what you have double spaded. Given all of that, with good preparation, I don't see any problem. Do you, Jason?
No, I think you hit it right on the head. Just make sure it's a large enough raised bed, and if it's perennials that are native to the region, they're going to survive the winter. If you're at all concerned, you can put straw in between the beds to try to insulate the edges of those raised beds, but I think you're fine as long as it's large enough.
So go for it. Thanks, Jane. Thank you very much for calling. Let's take another call, this one from Madison, and we'll go to Bill in Madison. Bill, thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Okay, so I have a large ash, maybe 35 or 40 feet tall, and it has been treated a couple of times by a professional arborist for the borer, but I'm still not that sure it's going to make it. So I'm looking for possible replacements that have same kind of growth habit, and what would be just a good replacement. And is Madison too far south for a sugar maple?
No, I wouldn't. No, it's not. But I'm going to give you my opinion on maples, and it's because I work with cities in northern Wisconsin, and I can tell you this, it's the most overplanted tree in the state of Wisconsin. 30 to 50% of the cities I work with, their street trees and park trees are maples. So there's a bug called Asian longhorn beetle. It's not in Wisconsin yet, but if it does get here, it's going to wreak havoc with it. So I don't necessarily recommend maples. Not that it's a bad tree, but I just think they're overplanted. Some trees that I think would do a good job for you, hackberry has a similar form or a form that's similar to an elm tree. There's a lot of disease-tolerant elms out there. Accolade, New Horizon, Cathedral, I would recommend those. You have lindens. Those would do well. I like the honey locust. I like the Northern Horizon honey locust. I love Kentucky coffee tree, espresso. That's a fruitless Kentucky coffee tree, and it's kind of open, so it allows some shade there. So I think those are some good recommendations for you to try.
Thanks very much for that call. On this edition of Garden Talk, we're broadcasting from the Bayfield Pavilion in Bayfield, Wisconsin. Our three guests today, Jason Fishbach, Don Kissinger, and Art Odie. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network. If you have a question for our guests today on this edition of Garden Talk as you're listening in, please give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org or post on the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page. And, of course, anyone in our live audience here, well, everybody's live who's listening, but, I mean, the ones that I can see, if you have a question, raise your hand and we'll get to you. I'm going to take a we'll take a call first, and then we'll go to the audience. But Joe in Friendship, Wisconsin, thank you very much for calling. What can we do for you?
Yeah, hi. I got this tree on my property. I never knew what it was. over the last couple of years when it grew. Anyways, 2 years ago, I found out it was a lime tree. And there were limes growing on it. And I'd like to know, the limes are nice and soft when they're on the tree, but as soon as I pull one off, in about a minute or so, it turns into a rock. It's as hard as a rock. What causes that, and what can I do to correct that problem?
Well, I'll tell you what, Joe. I have limey, my lime tree, which grows very well in my bedroom. And I keep it outside all year until it starts to get cold. And I've never heard of a lime tree actually making it outside year-round in Wisconsin. Art Odie, do you have something to add on that?
Yeah, I think this is my analysis. Linden trees, whether they're little leaf linden or whether they're American basswood, are often called lime trees. And I don't know where that derivation comes from, but I'm thinking that somebody must have said that this is a lime tree, and it's actually a linden tree. And if there are hard little fruits on it, it would be the little nutlets that are produced by the linden trees.
So I'm pretty sure you don't have a lime tree, Joe, but you can certainly have one if you got a sunny place inside where you can grow it in your house and put it out in the summer and take it back in the winter. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. Let's see. We'll take a question from the audience. And what's your name?
My name is Cheryl, and I'm from Superior. And my question is, do you see a future for the commercial production of honeyberries?
Honeyberries. You know, honeyberries, that conversation has come up before on Garden Talk. Jason Fishbach, comment?
Yeah, I hope it does, because it's a nice fruit, and the advantage is it has the qualities of a blueberry, but you don't need the same pH. It has a wider range of soil types that it's grown in. And we're also seeing more breeding efforts to develop new and improved varieties. Two that are out there right now, Tundra and Borealis, are out of Saskatchewan. But I encourage folks to try them. I think it's something that, you know, like most of our rare and unusual fruits, they're only rare and unusual because we don't grow them, not because they aren't good or won't work. So if you can find them from the nurseries, go ahead and try them.
So so you think there could be some commercial application for a honeyberry?
For sure, yep.
Yeah. What are they? How would you describe the taste?
I think they're favorable to a kind of a blueberry, Juneberry, somewhere in there.
Yeah.
I think it's a great flavor, and you just have to get used to eating something you're not used to eating.
I've had it in jam. It's a nice jam, mm-hmm. A very nice jam. Thank you very much for that question. And let's take another question from the audience. Hi.
Good morning. My name is Rebecca, and I'm from Duluth, and I have some grapevine, but I need to plant near it. What should I plant near the grapevines, and tell me what plants don't plant near?
Okay, well, grapevines are pretty darn tolerant.
I don't see any compatibility issues other than, you know, how large you let those grapes get. If they're going to, cover a tree, you probably don't want to plant anything near it if you're going to let the grapes grow. So as long as you keep them trimmed and cut them back every year, you could grow pretty much anything. If you could be creative with those grapevines and use them to create an arbor of some kind and create some shade, and that allows you to then grow some different varieties of plants that are shade tolerant. So that might be an option for you. Main thing is just how are you going to manage that grape tree. But in terms of compatibility with root exudates or something else, I don't see any problems.
Great extension publication called Growing Grapes in Wisconsin that you can get at the Learning Store, and I'd highly recommend a copy of that. I have grapevines. I have hostas growing right next to the grapes, and the grapes don't seem to mind, and neither do the hostas. So I guess that's what I do anyway. Well, let's take another call here. Tom in Strum, thank you so much for calling. What's on your mind?
Yeah, because I live on Hawthorne Street, I thought I should plant a hawthorn tree. And I went to the nursery and bought a hawthorn, probably 3, maybe 4 years ago, and we planted it ramrod straight up and down. Now I notice it's really developing a lean, and it's out in the open. It's not surrounded by other trees. So I'm wondering, why is it leaning, and should I try to stake it up so it stays straight?
Don Kissinger, you got any ideas about that?
I guess I would keep the lean myself, but maybe, I mean, you could try, I guess, staking it to some extent, but I mean, unless it's something at like a 45, I don't mind having some trees to have some small lean. I mean, this hawthorn is not going to be a large tree in the whole scheme of things as it is. You know, when it matures, it's going to get up to 25 feet, maybe a little bit more maximum. So I guess I don't have a real concern with that.
All right. There we go. Thanks very much for that call. And we'll take one more. Lewis in Manitouish Waters, thanks for calling.
Hi.
Hi, Lewis.
Hi. Say, when you introduced yourself at the beginning of the program, you said the Bayfield was fully in bloom, and you mentioned the magnolias were blooming with the daffodils and other plants. I never heard of magnolias growing that far north. Is that true, or is that's
yeah, it's true.
Story?
I can attest to that.
Art Odie here.
Yeah, I can attest to that. Mainly what we see in bloom around town here are cultivars of the star magnolia, Magnolia stellata, and they're perfectly hardy here. Once in a while, we get a really tough spring where the flowers freeze off and they look like paper bags hanging on a tree. But we've had some pretty decent springs for magnolias and other things that are maybe on the edge of where they ought to be. But here along the lake, we can grow all kinds of things that you can't grow even 30 miles inland.
Yeah. And thanks very much for that question. By the way, you can join in, too, with your questions at 1-800-642-1234. Give a call. Let's take another call or another question from the audience.
Hi, I'm Barb from Highbridge. I was given some compost or mulch last week, and when I went to pick it up, it's actually from evergreen trees. So I don't think I can use it in my regular garden, but can I use it around raspberry plants, blueberry, blackberry plants?
Yeah. Jason Fischbach, you want to?
Yeah, for sure. So if it's composted in it or mulched in somewhere in between, if you can tell what it is, evergreens, right? So then don't dig it in because it's not rotted enough. Really only dig it in as compost if you can't tell what it is. It looks like black coffee grounds. So use it as a mulch, and you could use it on any of those that you listed. And, you know, there's a lot of concern about the acidifying effect of evergreen mulch or compost, but it would take so much to move the pH of that soil that using it as a mulch, it's really not a concern. You don't want to dig it into the soil, again, because it's not rotted down enough. It's going to tie up too much nitrogen. But as a mulch on all those plants, it'd be fine.
All right, great. Let's take another call. Tim in New Glarus, on to you now. Hi, Tim. Hello. Thanks for calling.
Yep. Hey, everyone. I got a quick question about watermelon here. I built a little berm, and I'm going to plant them on top, but I want to put landscaping fabric around all the sides of them. I'm wondering if watermelons need something to grab onto in order to spread.
Do watermelons vines need something to grab onto in order for them to spread?
Nope.
Jason?
Definitely not. So the hill system of planting these cucurbits, I've never really been comfortable with that, because what happens is, you know, as they say, mound it up, plant two or three seeds per mound, right? And so what ends up happening is these plants are so thirsty for water, you can't water that mound because the water just runs off. And there's really no other good reason to plant them on a mound. That's just been sort of a tradition that's been passed down. So I think you could just plant them out. And if you look at commercial growers, they don't mound it up. They just plant in a row, and then they'll have it either right into landscape fabric around, or black plastic mulch. So just let them vine around where they grow. And the only issue would be weed control. You know, but if you've got the landscape fabric or something else to keep the weeds down, and eventually those watermelons will fill in, and you should have a good crop.
There you go. Thanks a lot for calling. Let's take another question from the audience.
Barb from Duluth. I have a pagoda dogwood in my front yard that I've had for quite a few years. I really like it, but in the past couple of years now, the bottom, starting from the bottom branches, the bark will turn yellow and the branch will die. I'll cut it off thinking it's diseased, and then it'll go up to the next branch. Is there a disease I should be concerned about?
There isn't a disease that I'm aware of. I don't know if any of the others are aware of anything. I mean, dogwood pagoda is a great tree.
I know what you're referring to.
This is Art Odie.
Yeah. It is a disease, and I couldn't tell you the name of the disease, but I've been watching pagoda dogwoods for a long time. And I love that tree. It has a structure that is unbelievable. I like the way it flowers. But I don't plant them anymore because I think they're unreliable. That's a native disease that seems to, if I see them out in the woods, and I think they all eventually get affected by it. I don't know if there's any remedy particularly. I think all you can do is cut the diseased areas off as far back as you can without ruining the structure of the tree, and I think that's about it. I hesitate to tell you to use a particular fungicide or anything because if it's not listed on the label, I can't do that. So I think you're doing what you can do.
Yeah, one thing you could do is send a sample of it to the Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic in Madison, and or even maybe start with a photo. If you've got a good photo, Dr. Death down there, we'll take a look at it, and if he needs a sample, he'd send it along. But it'd be interesting to learn if those guys at the Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic have an idea as to what it is. So it'd be worth contacting them there. And you can go online, Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic, and you're gonna UW Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic. And you're gonna be able to shoot them a photo, if nothing else. Okay, let's go to Kathy in who's in the UP. Hi, Kathy.
Hi.
What can we do for you?
Well, I have a question. We've been noticing our raspberries and some blackberries are getting the spotted fruit fly, a spotted wing fruit fly larva on them, and it's just been in the last couple years. You pick them and, you know, almost within a day, you notice these larvae. And I'm wondering if there's any information on that or attempts on how to not, you know, to get rid of it.
That is an unfortunate situation. Jason, are you familiar with it?
Good old spotted wing Drosophila, or SWD.
Yep.
There are a lot of resources out there with some suggestions and for control, and none of them are good. It's a pest that we really don't have a handle on. At this point, the cultural controls, pick early, pick often. They tend to go after all raspberries, but they particularly like the ripening fruit. So pick early, pick often. If you do start seeing an infestation, you can do a couple things. One, just pick all the fruit and freeze it, and it'll kill the larva. And don't think about it when you're eating the frozen raspberries. But, but perfectly safe. The other option is to use insecticides, and there are some, and actually some of the ones that are recommended happen to also be OMRI approved, so organic insecticides that work well. But nobody likes to spray anything on their ripening fruit that they're going to eat. So, unfortunately, we don't have good answers on this pest. We're hoping eventually over time that native predators pick up the pace here and start to keep this population under control. But this is an issue across the upper Midwest that we're dealing with right now.
It's kind of a system or a situation that often develops when you get something new in. There's a tremendous growth, and then over time, sometimes it stops or goes back a bit once those native predators get going after them.
And then here's the fun part. As soon as that one gets under control, in comes the next one. So if you don't like spotted winged Drosophila, wait till brown marmorated stink bug gets up here. It's just moved into the southern part of the state, and it's on our way up north.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
Yeah, I was doing a at the Garden Expo, and somebody held up their hand and said, "Here, I've got a brown marmaladed stink bug right in the middle of the Coliseum, the Expo Center, I should say."
Yeah. The other option here is to combat this pest is to start to diversify your fruit plantings, and you can use those raspberries as a trap crop because they definitely do prefer it. At my place, we have currants mixed in with the raspberries, and they'll go after the raspberries before the currants. Now you got to learn how to like currants, but you could try that. The other one is strawberries. They tend to leave the strawberries alone, or they'll catch the tail end, or at least this far north. Or we might start to look at seedless table grapes as a fruit option because they really don't prefer the grapes over the other fruits. And there are some varieties that have been through extensive testing now across Wisconsin, and we have a few that should survive our winters, 9 out of 10 winters anyway, going forward. So
there we go. Well, let's take one more call. Stephen Kiwani, it's your turn, excuse me. Hi, Steve.
Hi. I and thousands of others appreciate your show. Thank you. In Kiwani here, the city has a compost dump. It's free for the taking, and I'll bet a lot of cities across the state have this. And they throw all kinds of yard waste in there, as well as jug loam, walnut debris.
Black walnut.
Yes. So what does that do? How does that affect free compost for all these people that are taking it?
Yeah. Jason?
Well, so the free compost, when it's mixed sources, it's a bit of a gamble, right? You could have things like jug loam, but typically it's so diluted you may not see an effect unless you happen to live in an area with lots of walnut trees. But the other thing are herbicide residues. You don't know what's in there. And the other one is the weed seeds. So you end up typically a lot of buckthorn, for example, shows up in wood chip piles or compost. So it's kind of buyer beware on that material. You know, if you're using it on kind of low-risk crops or a mulch situation, it's probably okay. But unfortunately, there's just some guessing that you're hoping that it's an okay product.
I would encourage you to be sure that the city knows that they should be properly turning those mulch beds and that they should leave them piled up high until they really heat up in the center. And there are rules to follow in regard to properly mulching things on a large scale. And the city really ought to be doing it right, and I would hope that you would encourage them to do that.
Yeah. Thanks so much. Appreciate your call. Let's take a question from the audience. Hi.
Hi, Sylvia Whalen from Ashland. And I'm just wondering, I read an article in our local paper the other day about the bats, and I've also noticed in my own yard that I'm hardly seeing any bats anymore. And I'm wondering if you have any statistics on how our bat population is doing up here on the Chequamegon Bay Area.
Been a problem across the state with something called white nose syndrome, and we've lost a lot of bats, but I'm certainly not an expert. Anybody from my, yeah, unfortunately, none of us really have solid information on the numbers, but I can tell you for sure that the numbers have been declining here in the state, and the DNR has been doing a lot to try and resolve it, but it is, white nose syndrome is just a terrible, terrible disease, and unfortunately, I think all of our bat species can be affected by it. I'll do, from time to time, I do a show on bats, and Jill, we'll keep that in mind for another upcoming program, especially on our Wednesday when we talk outdoors and the environment on the show.
So, Larry, one thing to add is, you know, some of these issues where we have problems in some of our wildlife populations or even insects, say bees or bats, and you wonder as, you know, homeowners, what can we do? Because some of these are big policy decisions or discussions. But, you know, providing habitat is something that all homeowners can do, and bat houses, particularly if you live out in the country, are a good option. And there's lots of good plans out there that are available to build those bat houses and provide the habitat and hope for the best.
Yeah, that's a very, very good advice. I think Extension has, as an example, UW Extension has a publication on birdhouses and bat houses, kind of all in one publication. You might take a look at that online. You can get a copy for free at the learningstore.uwex.edu. Peter in Washburn, thank you very much for calling. Let's go to the phones here. Peter, hi. Thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi, in my front yard, I've got an area about 30 by 30 that is surrounded by about 12 pine trees. So except right late in the evening, it's partial shade the whole time. And nothing will grow, well, barely anything will grow in that area. And I was wondering if there's some type of ground cover that would that much shade and a lot of pine needles falling on it.
Okay, that's another tough question, Jason.
There, red pine, white pine? Do you know which?
White pine.
White pine.
White pine. Okay, so, you know, one thing to do when trying to sort of some of these landscaping questions is okay, you've got white pine. Go somewhere out in the wild, and living in the north here, we've got lots of opportunities, and find a white pine-dominated forest. Get your field guide out and just see what plants are growing in that kind of an environment. You might look at, you know, see what your soil type is like to match it up. But then really your best bet is to talk to some of the native plant nurseries around. There are a lot more than there used to be. And ask them, you know, what are some plants that are in this environment? Here's some that I've identified in my guidebook. It's a great opportunity to get out there and learn more about those natural plant communities. And then try to mimic that community in your own backyard. Rather than trying to force, say, shade-tolerant grasses or something else in an environment where maybe they aren't all that well-suited. That much shade, you know, a traditional lawn is probably not an option, and that's okay. Just look for some of the plant communities that would do well in that environment.
Yeah. Art, did you want to add something to that? Art Odie.
Yeah, this is not necessarily a native plant solution, but I have pine trees in my yard, and underneath them, they've pretty well been taken over by sweet woodruff, and that grows well in my situation. I didn't necessarily plant it there, but it's taken over.
Yeah. Okay. There we go. Thank you so much for that question. And we're going to take a quick little break here. Just a reminder that we're broadcasting from the Bayfield Pavilion in Bayfield, Wisconsin, with our guests Art Odie, Don Kissinger, and Jason Fishbach. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network. Email us at ideas@wpr.org or post on the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page. And we're getting a great variety of questions, which is what we want with our three guests for today, Art Odie, Jason Fishbach, and Don Kissinger. So we cover pretty much the whole gamut here. And please feel free to join in. Jan in Kronenwetter has been waiting a little bit, so let's go to Jan next. Jan, hi. Thank you for calling.
Yes, good morning. This is probably a question for Don. I had about like 20, 25 dead oaks. Some had fallen and some were upright. And I allowed them to scatter all the wood chips in that half-acre area. Do I have to be concerned about raking that up if they have the bug inside them? Can I use it for landscaping or what should I do?
Don Kissinger?
Okay, Jan, what you're referring to is oak wilt, I think, because actually I know where you live. And that is a situation, but if the bark has come off of the tree, it's not a situation with the insect, it's a situation with the fungus, and if it's come off the tree, it's dried out to the point, or the humidity has gotten to the point where it's not going to be growing well. So I don't see a problem in that situation.
All right. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And let's take a question from the audience.
Hi, I'm Bob, and I'm not going to tell you where I'm from for reasons I think you'll know shortly. But the local township routinely brutalizes and disfigures any oak branch that sticks out into the right-of-way just because they have that big moron an arm that can do it. Is there any education aimed at these folks to try to at least let them know what oak wilt is and could do to our area?
Don Kissinger.
Well, I guess I think, honestly, many times they are aware of it, and lots of times when they're going out there and doing that, it's when during the wintertime, during the, you're saying that it's during the, well, then I guess not. I don't know if. We try to get the word out there that basically we don't want people pruning trees April through July. I mean, at my house, I don't prune trees unless it's February. And I guess the thing that people should know is that really once the temperature outside gets above 60 degrees for a week, so whether that's in March or if it takes until May, That's when the trees are going to start being susceptible, because that's when the nenadulid beetle is out there. So really, it's temperature borne. So as far as getting the word out, you know, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him drink. So.
And those beetles, there's been some research on that where they've actually made a cut on a tree and then just waited to see how long the before the beetle would get there. And I think they were averaging like 20 seconds.
Right.
It's very fast.
Well, with oak wilt, the thing, and actually I was had a consultant call me a couple of days ago who's doing a development, and they were concerned about it. And as you said, Larry, basically if you have to, which I would hope you don't have to, but remove a tree or prune a tree at this time of the year, it's literally make a cut, spray. I mean, it's not like when I was talking to this developer, he said, well, we're going to do this, and the next day we're going to come back and cover it. And I'm like, well, in the first 48 hours after a tree branch has been pruned, an oak branch, it's either going to get oak wilt or it's not going to get oak wilt. So it has to happen that fast. So that's why I don't like to prune them at this time of the year. If you're going to have to remove a tree, if you would paint the outside ring, because that's really the live material of the tree, you could get away with that. Or if you're cutting a tree down, as long as you aren't, my biggest concern with oaks, if you're cutting a tree, is hitting other trees that have their limbs that are 40 feet up there. I mean, how are you going to get up there to paint that wound or take care of that wound? So that's why I really am very reluctant to deal with oaks at this time of the year.
Let's take a call from Brent in Chippewa Falls. Hi, Brent.
Hi. Just curious if your guest has any suggestions on how to eradicate. I don't know. I've had one tree service call them Japanese elm, and another tree service say it's Chinese elm, but they're... if you cut them down to a stump, you end up with 15 new sprouts coming off of it type of situation. And last year, the neighbor cut down all of her Asian elms along the fence, and now I have giant bushes along the fence, which makes it unusually hard to, you know, groom my lawn there. I'm just wondering what kind of suggestions you might have to eradicate them.
The only suggestion I have would be to, I mean, grind the stumps. That's a way that you're going to be able to get the roots out of there, and you're still going to have some that are going to come back up. I've got a similar situation with an elm, and it's actually by my septic system, and I cut it back every other year. I mean, that's what happens. It just keeps coming up, and I have tried to take the root out, but aside of that, and I really don't, I'm not fond of using the chemicals to deal with that, so I'm just manually taking care of it. I don't know if others have some suggestions.
I'd just like to comment that Chinese elms get a really bum rap, because China, what we're normally dealing with here and everywhere else is Siberian elm, which is an entirely different tree. And the Chinese elm is a relatively short stature, very decorative tree with a beautiful bark, and they're hardly ever planted. So I'm just saying that in this case the Chinese are better than the Siberians.
Okay. Chinese elms are better than Siberian elms. All right, there we go. Well, let's take a question from the audience.
Hi, my name is Sandy, and I live here in Bayfield. And I have a question about mulch. We've been seeing a lot of cocoa bean mulch show up in the garden centers. And what do you think about that as a mulch for our plants?
Art Odie?
I think cocoa bean mulch is very good. We used, years ago when I worked with the park system in Milwaukee, we took all the cocoa bean hulls we could get from Johnson Cookie Factory and use them all over the park system. So there's nothing wrong with them as a mulch. The only problem is that they're pretty light, and they do float away with rainwater and storms and so forth. The other thing is, I am told, and I'm not an expert on this, but I am told that that cocoa bean hulls can be poisonous to dogs. So
yes.
I would be, if that is in fact true, I have a daughter that raises dogs, and she says don't use cocoa bean mulch. So That could be a factor. Yeah. Otherwise, as far as the mulch is concerned, they're fine.
Yeah, they get a little stinky. It gets a little stinky after a while. They sound great. They smell great when they're first in, and then they're not so good afterwards or a little later on. Well, let's take a call from Greg in Waukesha next. Greg, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Larry and guests. There used to be a song or an expression, I'm a pepper, you're a pepper, he's a pepper too. And I don't know if you guys remember that song, but pepper plants seem to be the hot crop this year, at least this spring. And I wondered if you guys agreed with that. We are planting some of our own pepper plants and just having great results with them. We plant them indoors. I believe we plant them indoors. I'm totally blind. But wondering if you guys agree with that, and wondering if it's, I have a theory that it might be the sun that's helping these pepper plants, you know, grow and things like that, but wondering what your guests think. Thank you.
All right. Thanks for calling. Jason Fishbach, you want to try that?
Yeah, I guess I'm not sure if, you know, if there's something unique about this year in pepper plants. It's way too early for us really up here to think about pepper plants except in a high tunnel or inside. But, you know, that said, that if you look through the seed catalogs and you can see the amazing diversity of sweet bell peppers and hot peppers and everything else. So it's definitely a crop to try. You know, it needs warm temperatures, and we need nights consistently in the 50s before you think about putting them outside without some sort of protection.
Yeah, in the Madison area, I'm sure I know other people plant earlier than I plant, but I always wait to the end of May before I put my pepper plants out, just because otherwise, if you get a little cold spot, those flowers just go, they're gone, and then you're not going to get any peppers. You'll get plants, but you won't get any or very many peppers. So that's why I always wait myself till much later than probably the average pepper plant grower waits. I've lost my screen, so let's take a question from the audience.
My name's Jan. I'm from Washburn. I trimmed my pagoda dogwood this February with all these diseased branches. Now what do I do with them? I'm afraid to mulch them up. I don't want to put them in my compost. I'm hesitant to take them to the neighborhood compost. Do you have any ideas?
I dig a hole and bury them.
Oh, Art, go ahead.
Yeah, I dig a hole and bury them, unless Jason's got a better idea.
Well, we need to know the specifics of the disease, but typically you'll have fungal diseases that attack living wood and others. We call them secondary invaders that will take over dead wood or dying wood. And so usually when you cut the tree or do the trimming and the branches die, then the disease stops, but not always. So we need to find out exactly what that disease is. This is a great opportunity to utilize the extension service, where you can bring in the cuttings, the samples of the disease, or just take pictures to your local extension office, and then they'll use their specialists if need be to help identify what that is and develop a management plan for it.
All right. Let's take another question from a listener. And Kevin in Deerfield up next. Hi, Kevin.
Hi. A couple of tree questions. I have some plantings on a farm of mostly white pine and either Norway spruce or white spruce. And I do get a fair amount of wild grapevine that grows into those, and when I get a chance, I cut them, you know, somewhere near the ground or wherever I can find where they start. But I'm wondering if, I don't spray a lot of herbicides, but if I did want to spray like 2,4-D or something on them, would that control the grapevine and not hurt the pine or spruce? Or do you have a better suggestion for wild grapevine? And then the other question I have, some maple trees that have a lot of recurring suckers from near the bottom of the trunk. Have to keep cutting those off. Is there a way to stop those from growing, like if I put cut them and put Tordon on those sucker ends, will it hurt the larger tree, or will it work at all, or any other suggestions on that?
Okay, well, we got about 25 seconds here for... So let's take a look at wild grapes.
Yep, a couple options on the grapes. If you're an entrepreneurial spirit, I would consider letting those wild grapes grow and harvest them in the fall and make wreaths out of them. You could either make the wreaths yourselves or sell the vines. It's a great crop, actually, and there's increasing demand for that kind of thing in the floral industry. And that way, you know, you're controlling it every year by cutting it back, but then you can sell them. If you do want to use an herbicide to control it, don't use 2,4-D. Instead, you can use a spot application or what's called a rope wick application, where you're just painting the plant with a little bit of herbicide, most likely glyphosate. But again, I think looking as an opportunity to turn that weed into a crop somehow would be a good option for you.
We'll take a look at the news and weather and find out what else is in store for us, and then we'll be back. Larry Mueller here from Bayfield for Garden Talk. You're listening to Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here, broadcasting from the Bayfield Pavilion in Bayfield, Wisconsin, kicking off Bayfield in Bloom for 15 years now. It's been a lot of fun, a great audience, and having a lot of fun visiting with Jason Fishbach, our UW Extension Ag agent from Ashland and Bayfield counties, Don Kissinger, urban and community forestry coordinator with the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources, and Art Odie, horticulture consultant, semi-retired from the Botanical Garden and Arboretum Management field. So great to have them along. Questions? Give a call, 800-642-1234. We're also taking questions from our wonderful audience that we have here today. And, you know, before we go any further, I know every year, Art Odie, on this day to kick off Bayfield in Bloom, you have a tree planting. This is kind of a special one this year as well.
Yes, we've been planting an Arbor Day tree for the past 17 years and perhaps before that, but that's my history with it. And Don Kissinger has always been part of that process, and of late so has Jason Fishbach. And today the Arbor Day tree was very special for us, for the three of us certainly, and for the city, because it was dedicated to Jay Kablick, who was the owner of Jay's Tree Care. And he died tragically in January when a tree that he was taking down took a bad turn and fell on him. And I want to give a shout out to all the people who climb in trees, huge trees, sometimes 80 or 100 feet up or higher, and take care of these trees and do the actual proper structural trimming and all of the other care that has to be done for a mature tree. And we miss Jay, and we miss the service that he provided to the community, and we are happy for him to have spent his life taking care of our trees.
Thank you very much for that, Art Odie. Well, you're right. It's a hazardous job, and certainly he was one of the real, Jay was one of the really good ones, and there are a lot of good guys out there, men and women, who are doing it, and so we appreciate all of those efforts. We have many callers online, so I think we'll take another call, and then we'll take a question from the audience. Let's go to Thomas in Little Chute. Thomas, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. How are you today?
Great. Appreciate the call. What's on your mind?
My wife had me build a little garden. I had extra leaves from last year, so I basically did a frame that's like a 10 by 12 and about 10 inches deep. Put a whole bunch of leaves down and then a whole bunch of dirt. I'm mixing it up and stuff like that, but I'm wondering as far as what kind of vegetables or something can I plant in it that would do good this year? And is there anything specifically this weekend that would be safe to plant? Because we have some kids over that we want to, like, let them garden a little bit.
Okay, Jason Fishbach?
So the adding leaf material straight out from, the fall before can be a little bit risky in that you're adding a big slug of carbon to that soil, and the bacteria start to chew on it, and they tie up nitrogen. So you may want to consider adding some supplemental nitrogen, either in granular form, say urea, or some 10-10-10 fertilizer, or an organic source of some kind, just to make sure there's enough nitrogen to feed those plants. If the leaves are fairly decently composted and well mixed into the soil, you might be okay, but just something to be aware of. At this point, you know, other than, say, transplanting out tomatoes and peppers, I think you could plant just about anything. Planting with kids, if you can, the larger seeded things like beets or even still radishes this year, something that's easier for the kids to hold on to. Things like carrots, it's just you're going to have a big pile of carrots in one spot and none everywhere else. So have at it. And, you know, peas, beans, I think beans may be a little early, but if you're far enough south, you could try that. Kids love to plant peas because the seeds are so big.
Yeah. Thanks very much for calling. Let's take a question from the audience.
Hi, I'm Chris Thumb Superior, and I have a 7-year-old golden barberry that needs to be transplanted, and I'm wondering, can I cut that back safely and get it out of my garden into a new location? And it's going in a spot where my neighbor had parked an old car, and that's finally being moved.
You want to get some plants in there before another one shows up. All right, Jason.
So, transplanting shrubs this time of year and cutting them back is not ideal, but shrubs are resilient, and if you cut them back and transplant, it's probably going to be fine. It might be stunted this year, but eventually it'll move on. You said golden barberry?
Yeah,
we're discouraging planting barberries because they can be somewhat invasive, so if there are other shrubs to consider, but, you know, if you've had it there for a while and you're not seeing you have golden barberries all over the neighborhood, you're probably fine transplanting it. So if you have to do it now to avoid a new car, then go for it. Otherwise, wait till the fall.
All right.
I would suggest, too, that if you had the car there that was being parked, if you have a rototiller, if you could, you know, grind up that soil to get it nice and friable, that'd be a good thing, because otherwise that compacted soil is going to be tough for that shrub.
Okay. So the car's been there a long time, so I think you got some really good advice there, Don Kissinger. Thank you very much. Well, let's take another question from on the phones here. Keith in Green Bay, you're up next. Hi, Keith.
Hi. I have an issue with the spruce trees in my yard. I have both green and blue spruce trees, and they're starting to lose their needles, and it's getting worse and worse each year. It tends to start on the north side of the tree and get worse. Any ideas on a culprit and a possible solution?
Jason or Don, you want to go to Don?
Well, first of all, I'm not fond of green or Colorado blue spruce because they're not indigenous to this area. So they look nice. They do well for a while. They are prone to a disease called Cytospora canker, potentially. That's something that if you're noticing any white oozing on the trunk, that could be what your culprit is there. I do recommend white spruce that is indigenous to Wisconsin. They do a wonderful job. So that's what I would prefer having planted there.
With needle loss, it could be any number of things, and if you can grab the needles when they're still green but just starting to turn color, starting to die, that's where we might find fruiting bodies of a fungus, and you can send that into the lab for a diagnosis. My guess is it's probably a fungal disease called Rhizospheriae, which is very common in Colorado blue spruce, and it kills the second-year needles, and so the ends of the branches are green, but everything else back tends to be needleless, and there's, you know, short of preventative fungicides, there isn't a whole lot you can do once that tree's in. That's one reason why we're discouraging Colorado blue spruce. So it could, you know, you can try to get lucky in that the tree recovers and overcomes the disease. Otherwise, you're looking at a replacement at some point.
Something that you could look at, too, to see if it is rhizosphere is on the underside of the needles, there'll be black dots, typically, and you may have to use a hand lens, but that is the telltale sign of rhizosphere.
Yeah, there we go. Thanks so much for that. You know, as long as we're on trees for a minute, Jason, I know the last time we talked, We got questions about hazelnuts, and since then I've gotten additional questions about hazelnuts on the Garden Talk program. Could you give us an update on the program that you've got going?
Yeah, you bet. So we're hearing more interest because we're moving along in our breeding program, but overall consumer awareness and demand for hazelnuts in North America is growing. And so we're moving as quickly as we can. This is a, you know, for example, bringing a new apple variety to market takes 20 years. So it took at least that long to develop Honeycrisp, for example, and it's no different with hazelnuts. So we're somewhere around year 13, 14, if you will, and some exciting times, though, in the last year or two. We have identified from our initial selections eight genotypes, and then there are breeding programs elsewhere in the country that have made some of their selections. And actually, just yesterday, down at the West Madison Ag Research Station, and then last week up here in Bayfield, we established what are called joint performance trials. So we've got the top selections from the four breeding programs in the eastern U.S. and evaluating them all. So be an opportunity for commercial growers or homeowners to see those new varieties in action. The next step, though, is to get those commercially available, propagated, so growers can try them or homeowners can try them. So we're chugging along. In the meantime, there are a number of suppliers of hazelnut seedlings that are available that folks can grow. Seedling is what it is. It's genetically unique, so you don't guarantee what you're going to get, but we've got a lot of growers in the upper Midwest starting to build an industry around those seedlings. The American Hazelnut Company here in Wisconsin, down in Gay's Mills, is now actually selling a cold-pressed hazelnut oil, hazelnut flour, whole kernels, and there are other smaller growers starting to get into the market. So we expect things just to keep slowly but surely developing, and that's actually good. We don't want to see a real big boom and bust type cycle with industry. We're trying to grow this slowly but surely and sustainably, so we've got a long-term industry for and crop for growers in the upper Midwest and Wisconsin.
Yeah, that's just great news. I want to, Fran, Cheska in Madison has been waiting quite a while, so let's go there to the phones. Fran, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi there. Could you tell me the value of injecting a mature red oak with an injection to prevent oak wilt?
Don Kissinger?
Okay. In what area of Wisconsin are you again?
Madison.
Madison area? You know, that is something that can be done. It should keep oak wilt away. It's something that is a proposition that you're going to have to do probably on an every other year basis. So it's not a one and done type thing. The one thing that you do have to consider is, you know, that tree is prone, if you do have limbs being broken from storms and that kind of stuff too, that the fungus could begin that way. But by injecting the tree, you are going to keep it healthy, but again, it is a typically every other year type proposition.
Still, you've got a tree. If you've got a mature red oak on your property, the value of that is pretty high, isn't it?
The value, Don? could be thousands of dollars to your house, to the value of your house. Yes.
Yeah. So there you go. Thanks so much. And let's take a question from the audience. Hi.
Hi, I'm Lona from Iron River. I have a mock orange bush that is about, it's going on 7 years, and it has yet to bloom. Is there anything I can do to convince it would like to bloom?
Art Odie?
Well, I'm going to take a guess and say that it's probably where you are, it may not be hardy. How far south, it would be hardy vegetatively, but it might, the blooms might, the buds might freeze out. How close to the lake are you?
This is off of H and several miles.
Yeah, it might be kind of iffy there. But the only other suggestion I would have is be sure you're not over-fertilizing it and getting nothing but vegetative growth, but it may not be hardy enough there to actually bloom well for you.
All right, let's take, we have another question from the audience. Let's take another one.
Hi, I'm Diana from Bayfield, and I love roses, and I would like to know what are hardy disease-resistant roses that we can grow in this northern area.
Okay. Art Odie, you want to try?
Oh, I'm not a real Rosarian, so there's better people to ask than me. But certainly the pavement series, Purple Pavement, Snow Pavement, they're real tough. A lot of the old-fashioned roses, the rugosas, are all tough enough here. You probably know more about it than I do if you already have some roses. But if you obtain nursery-grown roses from this region, you'll have luck. If you just go to a big box store, you might not have that good of luck. But roses will grow great here. They just have to be a little on the tough side. One thing I would say is, do you have roses now that you're growing?
A couple old varieties.
Yeah. Don't prune them too harshly. They need all the help that they can get from spring growth. So don't prune them back to the ground or anything. But as far as hybrid teas are concerned, I would kind of consider them an annual up here.
Okay. A lot of people in the audience are nodding in agreement. Let's go to Judy in Eau Claire, who's online waiting. Judy, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. I was wondering if you could talk about the potential dangers or concerns with the use of lawn fertilizers for waterways, and wondering, are there any effects to insects or birds, and are there any alternatives to that?
Okay, Jason Fishbach, we'll go to you.
Sure. The main concern from the lawn fertilizers would be phosphorus, of course, and phosphorus is responsible for algae blooms in our waterways. So there's, of course, efforts to limit the amount that you use, and you're not supposed to use any more unless you have a soil test to prove that your soil is deficient for phosphorus. The other concern would be nitrogen, and you know, oftentimes folks have no idea how much to apply. And it was interesting, we did a Science on Tap event in Minocqua, was that 2 weeks ago, and just had a question. So if you had a 100-square-foot garden, how much 10-10-10 fertilizer should you apply? And these are all gardeners, and nobody knows, right? Because you have to do this a little bit complicated math. So it's important to sit down, go online, and figure out these fertilizer calculations and to know how much you're applying so you're not over-applying. Because the idea is to provide just the right amount that the plant will immediately take up and utilize so that the rest doesn't leach or move. Nitrogen, can leach through the soil and get into groundwater. So all of these are a concern. In terms of the impact on wildlife, it could go a couple different ways. If you've got lush lawns and gardens, you typically have more plant growth and more flowering, and it should be a benefit. If you're using it just to favor one species, say grasses over flowering plants, well, then it could be a detriment to wildlife populations or insects and habitat. So it's always a complicated answer, I know, but generally, you just, like any product that you're using, fertilizers, herbicides, you really have to understand what you're using, why you're using it, and have a good answer to that. If you can't answer that question, then don't use it.
Yeah. Thanks. Thanks for that question. Let's go to Joe in Mosinee. Joe, hi.
Hello. Hello.
Hi. Go ahead, Joe.
Yeah, they cut down a pine tree in my front yard, and of course, it's a chainsaw sawdust all over the place. Is that going to be a detriment to growing new grass?
So we got sawdust covering an area, and is that going to be a detriment to grass? If it's a thick layer, it sure is, isn't it, Jason?
Sure, you could just rake that up lightly. You don't have to get it all, but just get the big piles out of there, and you could throw it in the compost pile, or just rake it out to spread it out as wide as you can. I wouldn't be too concerned about effects on pH, but if it's, like Larry said, if it's too thick, you could suppress grass growth.
And let's take another question from the audience. Hi.
Hello, my name is Louise Levy, and I'm an arborist with Levy Tree Care. We have a branch office here in the Washburn area. I'd like to add something to what Don and Jason were saying about spruce and fungal needle diseases. Don pointed out that it's important to buy a native spruce, so that would be a white spruce or a black spruce. But what you have to keep in mind is that Black Hills spruce is a Picea glauca. It is a white spruce, but it's a subspecies of white spruce. And you'd have the same problems that you have with the Colorado blues, because they're from areas that are more arid than northern Wisconsin and northern Minnesota. So if you want a white spruce, you have to have a straight species white spruce, which are a little tricky to find.
All right. Thanks very much for that comment. We had someone who had a lilac tree that hasn't bloomed in 5 years. There could be a variety of reasons for that. Any comments from you guys? Jason, I think one of the things, is it a tree or if it's a, or is it a bush? If it's a bush, it probably needs to be, it may need to be pruned to get the, you know, the old, the biggest third of the branches out of there, so that you can then go ahead and have new ones come up and actually flower.
Yep. If it's a bush lilac that's become a tree, that's a problem. So you've got to rejuvenate that by cutting out those oldest branches. And if you're coming to that process late in the game, it's going to make that bush look a little ugly. So you could consider cutting it to the ground to start over. Otherwise, you're taking out about a third of that old wood per year until eventually you get on that cycle, so it doesn't look quite so drastic when you do remove some of that old wood. But that's the best way to reinvigorate that tree and get better blossoms on newer wood.
Boy, before we run out of time, I wanted to take a minute just to thank everybody who's been involved in that, in this. You know, I get to get up here and talk on the radio, but there's all kinds of other people that really make it all happen. Paul Damberg, Juan John Talcott, Brittany Williams, Aubrey Ralph, Jennifer Dargan, Dave Potratz, Jason Fishbach, of course, one of our guests, our other guest, Don Kissinger, Art Odie, Jill Nadeau has been running around with the microphone during the show, Nigel O'Shea as well. So all of those people have been doing a wonderful job today. And I get the fun part to get up here and sit and talk. It's always a great pleasure for me to be able to talk with gardeners, and especially master gardeners, and especially to be able to visit Bayfield and Bloom and get a chance to talk to everybody here. So I want to thank you all for being with us today. I'll let you know that there is a garden talk next week. Neil DeBoll from Prairie Nursery is going to be our guest on the show. So we're looking forward to that. And Monday, our physical therapist will be back to talk about different physical therapy techniques and answer your questions. Thank you for being with us today for Garden Talk.